Hi, my name is Jamie Ridgway, the head coach and owner of the Renaissance Academy of Martial Arts. And today I want to tell you about some of the programs that we offer at the Academy. So in our Little Dragons programs, our 4 to 6 year old class, that class is designed for, you know, teach kids focus. You know, at that age, it's very difficult for them to focus. So we want to teach them focus. We want to teach them basic tumbling, basic martial arts skills. At the same time, you know, stranger danger, what to do if there's somebody that comes along they don't know and how to act. So we go over all those things, kind of a prep program for kids. We teach a lot of jiu-jitsu in there too. The 7 to 12 year old kids, now they're a little more mature and they're ready to start taking a big piece of the information as far as like martial arts classes. So in that class, we teach them Taekwondo blended with Muay Thai kickboxing, blended with Gracie jiu-jitsu, so that they are well-rounded. They can kick, punch, clinch, and grapple. And that's where, you know, in today's world, we see a lot of self-defense situations end up, is on the ground. So they need to know that too. So when they come out with a junior black belt, not only are they focused, but they're also well-rounded as a martial artist. And you're gonna see things like respect and self-discipline at home through the program, because that's the most important thing that we're teaching the kids. And that is, hey, we don't want them to learn all these skills and not showing respect and saying yes ma'am and no ma'am and doing their chores at home. That's really what it's all about.
What's up, Sojourners? It's Obey here, your host for the Podyssey. I'm so excited that you're here with me today. I have two amazing guests. First up, we have Rachel Smith. Rachel's a Lynchburg native reporter for the News in Advance for the last 5 years. She also has specialties in personal networking and communications and also telling personal stories. I've read some of her stories and I promise you, you should check out some of her work. It is phenomenal. Also, we have Siobhan McGurl, who is reporter for WDBJ7, a CBS affiliate covering Lynchburg and Bedford County. She's from New York. She's awesome. She's funny. She's entertaining. And she's also very, very smart. And I think you guys are going to enjoy today's conversation with them, too. Rachel, Siobhan, welcome
to
the podcast. All right. So I had a lot of different things I wanted to talk to you guys about today. And one of the first things I definitely wanted to talk about on the podcast would be the Citizens Academy. So for those who don't know what Citizens Academy is, Citizens Academy is basically a 12-week kind of journey into local government. And you get to kind of see the ins and outs, budgets, all the things you probably were wondering, how does my city run? We got to do that for the last 12 weeks. And Rachel and Siobhan were both part of my class. And it was super, super, super fun. And there's ones usually either with police or just with your general local government. The reason I wanted to talk about that first is I found it very fascinating. I signed up not really knowing what I was stepping myself into. And it was an amazing kind of deep dive into local politics, which I believe is really forgotten today's day-to-day banter about national politics. I really feel like people don't realize that the way our political system is made up is you're really working on a system that's built for you local to national. And we really always focus national to local. And so stepping into Citizens Academy, it was a really great opportunity just to like have fun, meet new people and learn. And I love learning. So I kind of wanted to get like, first off, since we all did the class together, your opinions, like how was it for you guys? What did you guys think about it? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, how many weeks was it?
I think 12. It was 12.
Yeah, 12. Which was, it flew by four, so fast.
I felt like it felt long. Really? At some, like probably in the middle. And then it was like, we're done.
Yeah, graduation.
You know, I had people in my life who thought it was like only 3 or 4 weeks.
And yes.
I was like, no, this is.
Yeah, I see your certificate nice and framed.
Yes.
Making me feel pretty bad. I don't even know where mine is.
No.
But wow. Yes. It makes it look so
well, official. Don't feel bad. I hung it up because I thought it'd be just a good reminder that I feel like I want to be an engaged citizen, and I wanted to remind myself of the commitment I made for those 12 weeks to learn, but then not to just learn, but to actually
keep it going. Yeah. And at the core of what we did, I mean, that's why, for instance, I did it because I'm a local journalist covering this community.
Yeah.
And even though I'm learning something new and unique about this city and the surrounding counties every day, I feel like I still needed a deep dive, you know? And there were nights where I sat in that class and my jaw was like, it just dropped. Like, wow, that happens? You know what I mean? So even as someone who covers the city every single day, I was still learning something new. And I think that's so important that we have to understand that these systems of local government are massive. And there are a lot of employees, there are a lot of people who make it move. And it was important, at least to me, and I know a lot of people in our class, it was a passionate class from all age levels, to just go in there and learn.
I think that was what the unique thing for me was, is that you had people that were like way like into like their 60s, 70s, and they were older, very wise, not like saying that age is a bad thing.
No, people who are retired and living in their community wanted to learn more. And I honestly, I thought it was going to be more people who were retired.
Right. I was actually surprised to see.
There's a lot of young people.
Well, and I'd also looked through some of like the graduation pictures from beforehand. Oh. And I was like, wow, this is probably, I'm probably going to be one of the youngest people there. I really felt that way. And I walked in. I knew Siobhan was going.
But
and
in fact, we were out grabbing drinks a couple weeks before the class.
Yeah.
I think I
said, we did not sign up together.
Yeah, I was like, I know this sounds dorky, but you should sign up for this. And she's like, no way. I already signed up.
I was fully prepared to do it by myself. And then I ran into Daphne, who I already knew. And that was really cool. And I feel like we kind of like had like a little group going. And it was kind of cool to like know that there were younger people.
Engagement.
Like, I think, I don't know. I got into it less of a journalist, but more as just a Lynchburg native, just wanting to like, I had never actually heard of it before. And my dad, I guess I was just talking to him about like wanting to like get more involved in my community and just kind of know what's going on. And he just said, hey, what about Citizens Academy? And I looked it up. I mean, it's only once a year. And it just happened to be that they were like just started. It was just like that perfect moment.
Come on.
It was I mean, it could have been any other time in the year. I had to wait a whole other year. But yeah, I signed up and it was actually, I mean, it was like, I was super excited, totally prepared to do it all by myself. I'm really sad that I had to miss a couple of them for like other things that I'd already committed to, but
yeah, no,
it was, wish I could have gone to all of them.
Was almost like, wow. Like I wish we could do a deep dive into other aspects of our society like this and like take the time of just being committed for like, you know, 2 to 3 hours once a week just to like learn and gain perspective. Because I think it really opened me up to like, not only just like the local government, but like other people's opinions about local government. Mm-hmm. And I have never really tried to become a really engaged citizen. Like, you know, I'll vote for the president because, well, you know, my brother served in the military and it's the right thing to do. And, you know, but I never really was like, has engaged locally. And don't get me wrong, like as a national voter, I knew what I wanted in a president. I knew what I wanted in national politicians. But then as I started to really study politics, I was like, wait a minute. Like, this tax that I can't stand, the senator doesn't know what that is. Mm. You know, these roads or these issues in the Lynchburg community that frustrate me, like, we have one of the highest poverty rates in the state of Virginia. Like, the senator is like, it kind of matters to him, but it's really our local politicians. Like, what are they doing to ease that? What is my church doing to be a part of that? And so I signed up because two of my friends signed up and they asked me, and I thought, wow, like especially in the kind of season of life I'm in, doing a podcast, growing, learning, really trying to get back into reading more. Like I do read, I've always been a consistent reader, but just like really diving into like outside of just, you know, fiction or some really good nonfiction books. Mm-hmm. And as I started to read like Wealth, Poverty, and Politics by Thomas Sowell, which really changed a lot of my perspective with politics, I began to really want to like learn more about like, who is my delegate? Who's my mayor? Like when I found out Lynchburg's mayor was a black woman, I was like, does anyone else? Like, it was like, it blew my mind. Or the people on city council, or the way our mayor works versus other cities' mayors. I thought everyone's mayors work the same. And it's kind of cool when you think about the way our country was laid out. Dave, like there's so much freedom in like, not everything's uniform. So it's like, yeah, your mayor acts in this way, your city council acts in this way, and this city might be completely different. It's like, I actually kind of like that, you know?
I learned so much more even too, like about the fact that we are a commonwealth and we're a city compared to like how that affects how the city runs things versus if we were a part of a county.
Yeah.
And that was really interesting because I feel like the consensus from different departments was that that has its pros and it has its cons. Yeah. And I thought that was really interesting to learn, like, how unique our city is and our state compared to
everyone else. And they were making fun of us on the budget night, for instance, because they say that usually that's one of the driest nights. Mm-hmm. But I think it was probably the most exciting night for our crowd.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
I mean, we asked so many questions. I mean, the meals tax we could go on for. Mm-hmm. And I think
non-resident tax. I was like, yeah, this is a good point this person's bringing up.
Like, so that was my favorite part of Citizens Academy, is that even though I cover this every day, I was able to sit back and listen to the questions that other people had. And that was just a really cool learning experience, being like, oh my goodness, I never thought of that, you know? Or or like the first night, people were so interested in talking about food disparity. I cover food disparity often in Lynchburg, but some of the questions and the different angles people were coming from and the concerns they were raising, it was really interesting just to see how people were so engaged.
Yeah, so my question is for you guys, like, they brought it up at Citizens Academy. You know, you were one of the few, I think they, or ever, journalists that ever have signed up for Citizens Academy.
I do know one newspaper reporter before me, and Rachel.
Like, did one. But this has been going on for 13 years. I want to give her credit. Yeah. 14 sure. years? Yeah. I think it's been at least,
I wouldn't have known. I mean, the first time that I heard that was when Trinae said that, but I wouldn't have known otherwise.
But I think it's a testament to you two, though, because I was like, after meeting you guys, I was like, yeah, there are people that not only do you guys, I feel, take your job seriously, but also I think you really do care about the city. And I was like, man, that's kind of like almost sad in the way that, like, we haven't had more journalists that cover our city, that care about our city, step up.
I mean, I think a lot of that, and I might be stepping out of bounds here, but my opinion on that is, I don't know if this is just Lynchburg or it could be like the size of our city, to be honest, Obey, but, and Siobhan may or may not agree with me, but this industry where we are is just really transient. And so I'm not saying that journalists aren't going to, like, come in and be like, I'm going to dig my boots into the ground and I'm really going to, like, put roots down here and I'm really going to find out. I think that's what a lot of people might do from, like, for their 8 hours. But I know lots of people who are like, I'm here for a year, and that's, you know, and that's fine. They're looking to get on, and that's great. But, you know, Siobhan's not from here, and she's, like, I mean, in my opinion, really made the city her home for however long it is. But I don't think that is necessarily the norm.
Yeah, well, you know, here's the thing. First, you can only cover so many stories in the city before you really start to care about it, right? I mean, you meet people at the worst times, you meet people at the best times.
Yeah.
You live here, you go out to eat here, and you want to learn more. So that's kind of my perspective. But also, I'm so fortunate that at WDBJ, I'm learning under Tim Saunders, who is a Bedford, Virginia native, grew up here, knows everything you would want to know about Bedford, Lynchburg, Campbell County. So I'm so lucky because he actually took the Lynchburg Police Citizens Academy. And so he kind of put the bug in my ear early on. And not to put me and Rachel on a pedestal, honestly, if no one ever put the bug in my ear saying, like, hey, this is a thing going on, I don't know if I would have necessarily thought about it. And also, too, journalists are, I mean, the schedule's crazy. So, you know, why people wouldn't do it before or not. I think that we're just lucky that the cross sections of our lives, like, kind of just ended up that someone put the bug in our ear, whether it was Rachel's dad or Tim Saunders for me. And honestly, I had on, like, my to-do list to sign up, and then I was interviewing the city manager one day. I was like, you know, just starting conversation, I was like, I'd like to do that Citizens Academy thing. And she was like, please sign up, like, right now, and just do it. Just call them. The deadline's going to close on Friday. So it was, you know, honestly, just lucky that we both ended up where we were, and not to fault any journalists before us who didn't do it. You know what I mean? Everyone's out there trying their best to tell the stories of our local communities.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So then I'm still stuck on, like, you two getting into journalism and also signing up for Citizens Academy. I kind of want to know a little bit more about y'all's story. So, like, I want you guys to tell me a little bit about, because you're from New York, and Rachel, where are you from?
Here
in Lynchburg.
Yeah.
Local. Like, like,
born and raised, baby.
Yeah. Like, really? Here in this, like, in,
like,
Lynchburg.
What high school did you go to?
Goss.
Ooh. Okay. You really about it. Is it Hilltoppers?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're from Lynchburg. You became a reporter for Lynchburg. All right. I'm gonna give you guys a chance to give me like a little bit about who you are, but then I also want to ask you just like three questions to address as you're telling that. So
it's so Rachel, funny. From we're here, take deep breaths. We are journalists, not used to being interviewed, but go ahead.
Right. Exactly.
Take the reins.
So Rachel, you've been a journalist for 5 years, right? And Siobhan, how long have you been a journalist?
2 years.
2 years. Okay. All right. So Rachel, tell me your story, and then I want you to tell me one favorite book you had growing up.
Oh.
If you didn't have a book, you can
why
have
would
a
you throw that on me?
Or if you, it's okay, breathe. It's all right. If you did,
didn't
if
give
you,
me any time. Like,
oh, I could have prepared my favorite book.
Could have found out.
No.
I'd be like, hey, mom.
No, no, no. Or if you don't have a favorite book, give me like a favorite TV show. I want to know also, like,
growing up.
Yes,
ahead.
A job or thing you did. Or sorry, what job or thing you thought you were going to be doing when you thought of yourself, like right now at the age that you're at, the season of life that you're at? And then third, what was your biggest fear growing up?
Okay.
And again, no one knows your favorite books. So if you just name one.
Is this like a favorite book from like growing up? Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
Like Goodnight Moon is okay.
My parents read to me, like, for the record. I just cannot. No, of course they did. I had like a whole.
We didn't know, of course they did. Not
I am educated.
But I just like, I don't want to give off the impression like I didn't grow up like learning to read or something. I just do not. I like, I if I went down and like, because my mom.
Name one book
my mom saves
first
everything.
Book
so I know that we.
Like first book. And you like, I remember that book and I liked it.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I don't know.
None.
I'm completely like growing up
from 0 to 18.
Oh, okay. I remember going through a phase where I really loved this book. I can't think of the name.
Tell us about it.
Okay, wait, what was it called? I think it was called like, God, this is so embarrassing. I was obsessed with this book for a little while. And I don't,
like, if you met the author, would you have cried?
I remember the girl's name in the book.
Nancy Drew?
No, it was like a beautiful tragedy or tragic beauty.
Okay.
So, oh,
hey,
making myself
can,
look
stupid. You know what you can do? You know what you can do? You can give us the book later. We'll
I just
add
remember
it in the show
loving.
Notes.
I just remember loving this one book when I was like, and I also like kind of went through a phase when I was like in like the summers during high school where I listened to a lot of books on CD.
Whoa.
Of course, I can't think of any of those right now. Off the top of my head, that's really hard. I still have that book at my parents' house. Like, I won't get rid of this one book,
Rachel,
because I loved it so much.
Rachel, nobody
like, she totally
is
just
testing
made up that
you.
Beautiful tragedy.
No one is judging you. You were totally fine.
I remember, okay, I love this book so much. I thought they were, I had, like, read rumors that they were going to make it into a movie, and
Rachel,
then they
did you read Twilight?
Oh, no.
Just say
no.
No,
I didn't.
Please,
I didn't
no,
read
not
Twilight.
Twilight.
Yeah. Okay,
what'd
so.
You read as a kid?
Okay.
Like little books. I don't know. Like I took the test. I took the test and I like, you know, we get to like pick out prizes.
Okay.
I can't remember what they weren't even SOL. They were like those tests that you take for reading points. I don't
okay.
remember what they were called.
Okay. All right. What about a job that you did?
Rachel didn't read.
Am I supposed to tell my story first?
Yeah. But like
okay.
within your story.
Okay. So, well, I guess, well, I start, you want to know like how we got into being journalists.
Yeah. So like, I'm
story.
Curious,
okay.
like these three questions, I'm just like curious along your journey, like, was there a book that was influential? Was there a thing that you thought was influential? Yeah. Like you wanted to be like, you know, a lawyer or a doctor. And then as you grew,
no,
like what led you
actually,
down this road? And then what was your biggest fear? And
I guess like what, well, I'll kind of jump in really quick and say like, you had asked the question, what I thought I'd be doing right now with
yeah.
my life. I really had hoped, when I was growing up, like truly and seriously, Siobhan's going to scoff at this. I really wanted to like, just be like a wife and a mother. Like that's really what I wanted. Like, and now I'm like really glad that I'm a career woman, but I really wanted that. Like that's what I wanted. And I don't know if that was because like, I think on one hand it was like really what I wanted. Mm. On the other hand, it was like, I really didn't think that I had like any real skills or like, I knew that I knew how to like talk my mouth. I knew how to like talk all the time and I knew how to write. One of my high school, my senior year, in one of my writing classes, the teacher told my mom that I wrote too much. And my mom was like, yeah, that's like her thing. So when I went into college, I decided, I was like, I don't really know what I want to do. I don't have like a degree in mind. And so I decided to study English. And, you know, when you go to college in that first couple of weeks, you're meeting people and they're like, what's your major? Where do you live? Kind of thing. And I'd always say English, and I got the same response, and it was always, so you're going to be a teacher. You're studying to become a teacher. And I was like, just couldn't figure that out. I was like, no, why? And they always said, well, that's what you'd study. Like, that's what English get. That's where English gets you. Oh, and so okay. I kind of freaked
already
out.
Those people already limited yeah. your potential.
Yeah. So I,
how did that make you feel?
I was relieved. Mm. I was really relieved because I didn't want to keep going through all those classes and then find out, you know, junior year, this isn't what I want. And wow. so luckily where I went to school had resources on the campus, for career counselors. And I went to go meet with one, before I really got into my hardcore classes. I mean, this was like fall semester back in 2009. And, I met with her every week and we would take personality tests. We'd take career tests. We'd talk about stuff. And we got down to the point where it was between, public relations or journalism. And she said, okay, I have like a test for you. Go, contact the local, or not the local newspaper, but the school newspaper. And she said, reach out to them and just ask them to, if you can write an article. And so I did, they were happy to take me. And I said, I just want something really low key, like do not put me on the news beat. I don't even think I knew what a beat was. And I said, so we have something like entertainment. And she said, why don't you just go like get a book from the library and write a book review? I was like, you know, I don't remember. It was something about a lock and a key and like two sisters. I can't remember.
She got
leave
for her.
I can't remember the names of any of these books. And so I went to the library, picked off like the first book off the shelf that I found, and just like went home, read it like a couple of hours, wrote it down, and I sent it out there. And I'm sure that when that article got published, I'm sure it was like my roommate and my mom that read it. But when I saw my byline in the school newspaper, I was totally hooked. Like that was it for me. And I went and I changed my major, and it was perfect because I didn't get, you know, it didn't push me back at all. I hadn't really started on any of my major classes yet. And so I just switched and I, you know, never changed my major, just went with print journalism. Mm-hmm. And that was that. And then I had really wanted to work in Richmond. That's where I wanted to go, was Richmond. That was like my dream place, to go to Richmond. And I just ended up falling in with I did some shadowing with the News in Advance, worked a little bit for some area magazine publications, freelancing, and then got a freelancing job for the News in Advance, and then got offered a job at the weekly paper, the Nelson County Times, which is like a sister paper that's produced in-house, and one reporter works in the News in Advance. And so I started there in 2014, and just have never like left yet. So I've just enjoyed it, and I've gone to cover Nelson County for a few years, Bedford County for a year and a half or so, and now I'm covering businesses and nonprofits, which is way more challenging than either of the other two. Covering like an entire county to yourself, like that was tricky. But covering businesses and nonprofits is like a whole other animal. But yeah, that's kind of my story. I think I answered all your questions.
I think you did a fantastic job. Thank you. That was really good.
Thanks.
All right.
All right. I get to listen for a little while.
Yeah. I want to hear Siobhan again. Try as you cover your story to let us know your favorite book growing up, or maybe a book that was influential to you, or a TV show, movie.
All right, yeah.
What job or thing did you think when you were whatever age you can remember that you were like, man, like I really want to be a scuba diver?
I knew I wanted to be a journalist.
From how young?
Okay, I would say the age old enough to make a very realistic career choice, like fifth grade, maybe.
You know, right when you start like they... I could have just started working that day, but you know, child labor laws got in the way, like fifth grade. Yeah. Right. While other kids how old were you in fifth grade? How old were you?
10.
Well, okay. So
you were writing 11? Stories about the boys.
Guys, yeah. And about the what?
Like the boys, like, you know, riding their bikes and the playground in recess, like today. Covering
no, she had
recess.
Her mic up in the police chief's face. Like.
Oh, as a 10-year-old, like, sir, what are you going to do to protect this city?
All right, I'll give this to you. From first through fifth, maybe, I told everyone I wanted to be a famous actress.
There we go.
I was going to major in famous actressing. So by the time I was able to make a realistic decision.
I feel like there were videos of you doing plays.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, when when I decided journalism, I didn't stop with the whole play thing. So yeah. Yeah, totally.
Right.
You could dig some up or I could just hand them to note.
Guys, we'll add those in the show notes. Gotcha.
Yeah. Online extra. No, I was the kid who they told me to stop talking in class. They told me to stop asking questions. Up until, my senior year of college, I was, can someone else answer, please? Or can someone else ask a question? And they also limited my reading. they would, put a sign up in front of...
It's like Handmaid's Tale.
Right. It breaks my heart looking back because I was so excited to raise my hand and read in class.
Where'd you grow up? Where is this all happening?
Right outside of Philadelphia in South Jersey is where I went to school.
Oh, so you're not from New York.
Brooklyn roots. I lived in Brooklyn. Family's all from Brooklyn. But I went to high school right outside of Philly. And that is where my name was up on the board saying, Siobhan cannot read for the month of February. Yeah. Crazy. So anyway, base of that story being, I always wanted to tell stories. And my junior year of high school, I was given the opportunity to do a news kind of internship for high school students on the weekends at CBS Philadelphia. So that was the one fortunate thing. My family, be it that they're from the two huge cities, they're from great media markets. So I got to learn from the greats. So I did that internship at Philly when I was a junior. And then when I went to college, did the whole journalism thing. I interned a whole bunch in college. My friends all studied abroad. And I was like, Manhattan is right there. And that's where ABC News is. CBS News is there. So I was so fortunate. I did. I went back to CBS Philly for real. I did a real internship there. Then I went over to ABC New York, their local station. I did 7 on Your Side, which is, you would love this, Obey. It's,
come on.
It is a whole unit built around helping people. So they call in with their issues and we figure out how we can help them.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, when I worked there, I helped get more than $150,000 in restitution for people. So that was really fun. And then from there, I went to the networks. I did Nightline with ABC News. I went to the CBS News Investigative Unit with Scott Pelley, worked on their team. And then I wrapped up my college career at 2020. And then I moved out to Lynchburg because of this great job opportunity. So yeah, it all, so this is a story I told when I was in college. Okay. I had to speak to the freshmen coming into our class, right?
Okay.
And I think the moment that it all hit me, I also did speech and debate. So my whole college career was about telling people's stories and getting to hear from other people. And I really think the most valuable thing about this job is you get really empathetic. You probably agree, Rachel, that's one of your best traits is that you're able to listen to other people and share their stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one day on my way to my internship at 2020, so this is full circle for me, I was walking through Penn Station during rush hour, so craziness. And this is so silly, but I lost my lipstick, right? So go ahead, yeah?
I mean, this is I think this is one of the most tragic plays I've ever heard.
No, listen, I told you. It was
right after the Iliad was this.
Okay, Obey.
The girl who lost her chapstick.
It was
three parts.
So I'm starting it off by saying it was silly. And I was like, but hey, there's a Rite Aid in Penn Station. I'll just stop in real quick, whatever. So
it was mandatory that you had new chapstick or lipstick. Sorry, I apologize.
It was convenient and I had extra time in my commute.
Okay.
I stopped
in the middle of rush hour.
Could you let me tell my story?
I'm so sorry. I apologize.
So I stopped into the Rite Aid and as I'm looking at the different colors, there's this man in the next aisle, right? And I'm listening and I notice that he's crying. And I listen a little bit closer. And he starts saying things like, Mom, I love you. I'm so sorry I'm not there. Thanks for everything, Mom. And I'm sitting there, literally craziness is going on outside of me in Penn Station. And I find out that this man is saying goodbye to his mom on the phone and she's dying. It keeps on going on and on. And he's crying and he's in this business coat. He talks about getting a flight and where he's gonna go. And in that moment, my whole body just, what do you do in that? How can you hear those intimate things about a person and not do anything, right? And so I went over to the card aisle and I bought a sympathy card. I filled it out. And by the time I got done at the register, he was gone. And it was was like, oh my goodness, I'm never going to know the end of his story. I'm never going to be able to let him know. Like, I wrote on the card, I just want to let you know someone in this world cares. I'm so sorry for what going through. And it broke my heart that I'm never going to know the ending to that. And at that moment, I realized that it really had come full circle for me, that this job really is about the unique privilege we have to be able to enter into people's lives when they may be facing the worst day of their lives. And it's our job to sit there and have that empathy. And instead of writing a card, I have the great privilege of telling the story. And I don't think I would have ever gotten to that moment if it were not for my experiences in college with my internships and with traveling the country with my speech team and stuff like that. And so then I try to carry that with me. Like, people make fun of me at my station because I love breaking news. I don't know. Do you love breaking news?
No.
No. So, yeah. Okay.
Like, loud it's and proud, not, I don't like breaking
it's
news.
It's not a common thing to love.
I just love Rachel's turn.
No.
No, I don't. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Totally not a ashamed of it. Thing to love, but I think I love it so much because I'm able to go in and like with that empathy. So anyway, that's my story. Any books on the way that inspired me? They inspired me like after the fact, like after I decided I have to do journalism, like Stephen King's On Writing, love it. There's a silly book. I hate the title. It's called The New Sorority, which makes it seem like, I don't know, but it's about the greats like Diane Sawyer, Katie Couric, Christiane Amanpour, and it's a book all about them. So I love that book. So I like more of the books that tell me how to do my job better and I can learn from the greats. Does that answer all of your questions?
I'm telling, we got some powerhouses in the studio tonight. Man, Sojourn Studios is just having a little sizzle tonight. I love it. I love it, guys. Good job. Good job, good job, good job. Okay, so that leads you guys to becoming journalists.
Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, is there anything else you guys want to talk about Citizen Academy or anything else you want to touch on? You feel like you've expressed?
I think the only thing I'd like to say about the Citizens Academy is that I really appreciate the people behind the scenes that do all this stuff. You know, Public Works. There's a lot of people on the streets that are doing that job, driving on the side of the trash collector, garbage truck.
I think everyone should desire, if you're listening to this in Atlanta, in California, Detroit, any city, state, look up your local Citizens Academy, especially look up your local Police Citizens Academy, because these two opportunities really like give you a deep dive into, hey, what does a police officer do? Let me go on a ride along. Hey, what does my local government do? What's the power that my mayor has? Who's in my city council? Who's on my school board?
Yeah.
Who picks up my trash? I didn't know certain things about the way we pick up trash in the city. I didn't know about how our water is treated. I didn't know the amount of money spent on just making the roads more efficient, like an efficient road system. And this is just, I geek out on this stuff.
They were so passionate about it too, Obey.
Yeah, but it was so informative, really, and I just love it. It was entertaining to me.
Everyone we met was so nice. They were all like really into their job. I mean, it was like the passion behind it, just to share what they do and to inform us and to get to know us as well. Yeah. And I thought it was cool that they were like, you know, we are your local servant, whatever you want us to. I was just like so blown away by that. I was like, how can we do it better? You? Like that was just cool to me. And I was really like, cool. Wow, like thank you so much. I'm sure you don't hear that like ever. But
well,
I think
the really cool thing too is that so many of these people, like, okay, fire chief, police chief, city manager, deputy city manager, these are the people that are more common to the everyday people, right? They may see them and say, oh yeah, that's the chief. But we got to meet the lady who balances the budget and her team. We got to meet the people behind the communications marketing team, the city assessor, the city attorney, all of these people. And when they got up to talk about their jobs, I first of all appreciated that they were open to critical questions and they were open to people being skeptical. It wasn't like a, we love Lynchburg best. Mm-hmm. It was all coming with the understanding of, sure, we all love Lynchburg, but let's talk about these issues.
Yeah.
And every person, and this might be true across all local governments, but every person, every one of those behind the scenes people who talk to us, they talk to us with the same excitement for their jobs that Rachel and I just talked about with our jobs.
Exactly. It was amazing to see how many people are invested in just doing their little niche job that works with housing code. So I was just, that was one of the unique things. I would have thought a lot of boring like the Geico commercial kind of people where it's like, this can't be real. Like, it's just so funny. It's just like, they look like, almost like, you guys remember Secret Life of Pets? Where like, he went to like the DMV. It was like the sloth people with like the tie and just, nobody. I'm losing
didn't
you.
See just it, like yeah. very like,
Milla Vanilla, just like, I could have taken
very all, bleak.
Yes. Yeah. Just like, I work in the library. You could just feel like the joy was sucked out years ago and the body's still there.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So if you're listening and you have as low of a bar
I was really,
pleasantly surprised.
I was just so pleasantly surprised to see like each, we're talking to a lady who like, I love Parks and Rec. I love library services.
Remember the library lady? She loved her job.
It was everyone.
I'm thinking about all these people. They all like
each one. Their faces are popping into my head.
Right. It's just. It was really fun. Like I love business development and bringing in you great businesses for this community to provide jobs and to bring to aid to the flourishing of this community. And so I just was like so impressed with that because people can lie, people can fake things, but I felt like when you're one on one, just as someone who studied communications in college. It's very hard for a long form, easy in short term, but people had long amounts of times, long PowerPoints. And so if we knew that they weren't enjoying it, you could feel it over time. Eventually it's hard to keep that going.
They were upset when Joanne was like, all right, wrap it up.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We were upset. We were like, going. can we meet
but
after?
They did a good job of like doing different things to be like more hands on.
Right. It was cool.
Yeah. I appreciated that. It wasn't all PowerPoint.
I loved the fun facts we learned. Like it still blows my mind that the city attorney, when they found that skull on the trail and they had to transfer it back to the medical examiner's office. Okay. So years go by, medical examiner's office has this random skull. They don't know who it belongs to. And they called the city attorney and they're like, well, since you're the city attorney for the city of Lynchburg, this was found on Lynchburg City property. This is your skull. And so he had to go get the skull.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I was like.
Yeah. So that stuff, that was so interesting to me. It's like the behind the scenes that you're not going to get in a press release and you're probably not going to get if you file an open records request. You know what I mean? So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I want to know we've talked a lot of good. I want to know what's the most like frustrating thing you learned about city government? For me, the budgetary things were just like, I was like blown away. And so I did not know how much money was going into the city of Lynchburg. I was like, at times, like, this is a large amount of money used on just payroll to then bring the amount of money that's spent on just services. So that was probably the most like, I wouldn't even say frustrating. I think it was most eye-opening aspect that I wouldn't have known if I didn't do it, and I'm really glad I did it because it opens up the conversation of like, compared to other cities, how are we doing? If I want another service, I can then now know how to have that conversation with certain departments. Because I'm like,
Honestly, you know? But I'm not sure because when I think of the things that would the things that frustrated people in the room, when those things happen and you could feel those kind of tension points rise room, they were things that I've covered. And they were things that I've known and I've done deep dives into. I went to most of the budget workshops this year, and if I couldn't attend one, I'd watch it online. And so I'm just for my job. And so a lot of those things, I wasn't surprised. And to be honest, with Citizens Academy, most of the things that I learned, the frustrating things were things that have already been in the news, and most of the things that I've learned were more interesting things and story ideas and about different issues the community is facing. For instance, there's a need for guardians for seniors in the community.
Right.
So I'm doing that story next week.
Right.
And so those are issues, maybe not, I wouldn't sit there and be like, I'm so frustrated with how it works. Because I've just seen a different side of it.
See, that brings up a topic that I wanted to address with you guys, because as journalists, I'm going to be honest with you, I know you guys, but I don't watch the news. And it's not because of you two, because I've read Rachel's work, and I've definitely seen you on TV, but I don't go out of my way to watch the news. And that's because of years of just leading me away from the news.
How? And now I'm interviewing you.
Right. So I just think that, with journalists and journalism, I have really been frustrated, and it's been hard for me to decipher when is someone telling me something that is newsworthy And when is someone telling me something that's their opinion, that they think this needs to be newsworthy? And I don't, and I started to, like, as I got older, especially in college, I started to really ask the question, who decides what is news? There are so many things going on in the day-to-day that I got really frustrated. And again, this was back in the time where I was, like, in college, and it's like, Barack Obama's running for president, I'm watching the news, I'm like, I don't like Fox News' coverage here, I don't like CNN's coverage here. And I started to think, like, wait, Anderson Cooper's just telling me his opinion. You know, it's like, hey, let's cover this story in this country. For example, let me give you an example. The hashtag Bring Back Our Girls movement, right? I found it extremely frustrating that when we looked at that whole season of, like, there were these girls that were supposedly captured, taken out of their boarding school in Nigeria, and then by Boko Haram, which is a very militant Islamic group, and they were rushed off to who knows where. They couldn't find them. And Michelle Obama, like, holds this, like, picture up of, like, hashtag bring back our girls. And all the news coverage is just like, my goodness, Michelle is, like, so brave. And then the story just, like, moves away from, like, it's no longer covered. And I remember sitting there and I was like, yo, this is, like, something that just, for me, is, like, you know, being born in Nigeria, it's just very common. It's like the tension between the North and the South, Boko Haram. And at the time, you know, women were becoming more prominent, becoming more important. And I was, like, sitting here, like, why is nobody asking Michelle, like, hey, what are you going to bring this up to Barack? Is the military going to do something? Are we working with Nigeria? Is there going to be a cover to the, is there going to be, like, a follow-up to the story?
Yeah.
And then.
So I could roll with you here. So, one, I'm, so with my journalist nature, I would need definitely, sources to see what you're talking about. One.
Right.
Two, when I was interning at Nightline, they did an extremely compelling piece on this same exact issue that you're talking about. While they were on the way to one interview, their source they were meeting, they found out that she died. It was an incredibly moving piece.
Yeah.
It took up the whole episode. I'm pretty sure it won some awards. I know NBC News, I know that their investigative team did a lot of work on Boko Haram. So I think that...
Again, I'm not saying... Here's what I'm saying in this microcosm. As someone who was a layman just watching news from time to time, I just found that, like, did the news cover this story because they care about those 300 girls and they wanted to see them returned? Do we know what happened to them? Will they be returned? Or was it the kind of the era that we're in right now? News moves so fast and things are covered so quickly that before you blink, Barack was out of the office, Donald Trump is president. And it's like, hey, did anyone, like, I just was like, oh, I was amazed that the story that was told wasn't like, hey, day to day, what is going on? Are these girls coming back? The story was told, hey, Michelle is a woman that's, like, powerful and amazing, which I'm not saying she isn't. But it was like she shared a hashtag. She's married to the president, and I wanted the story to be more so on, like, what is that? It's just, again, this
yeah.
is like
yeah,
a microcosm story of, like, what yeah. I saw.
Yeah, and so that's my thing. Like, I couldn't comment on that newsroom's decision yeah. process.
Well, it's just I'm listening to you, and I'm hearing, like, my response says, like, I don't know. You know,
right.
We, like, the biggest thing to me is, like, I mean, maybe Siobhan could jump in on this a little bit better than me, but, like, I only know how local news works. Like, that's all that I know.
Right.
I don't know.
I think, no, I raised that story to say.
Because we do things so differently.
Right.
I mean, completely.
Right.
We do cover things, like, day to day.
But before, because I know you're going to change the topic to the local news thing. But
no, I'm not going to change. I'm not changing the topic to local news thing. I was saying, I was sharing that story to say, the reason that, like, you know, when you say, hey, I'm looking at Citizen Academy, like, I've covered these stories. And I'm like, this is all news to me. There's that disconnect between the common person like me who goes to work every day, who's doing their normal job day to day. And I just feel for you guys in the news because I see the national journalists eroding people from, like, actually listening to
yeah.
you guys.
Yeah.
And then I also see social media affecting you guys because, you know, I have friends that are, like, you guys are reporters where I've shared a story that I just saw some friend, like, post. I was like, oh, look, like, this is happening in Lynchburg. And I just like reposted it because it was like, oh, let me share it to my friends. And my friend, who's a reporter, was like, hey, I worked hard to cover that story. Share my story because I work for this paper and it's a reputable source. And I was like, I apologize. Now that I have friends in this industry, I was like, oh, let me just post the story. But I'm like, man, that day-to-day battle's got to be frustrating. So I just shared that story not to say I don't like Michelle Obama. Not saying that. I don't like CNN. Not saying that. I don't like Fox News. Not saying that. I'm saying for you guys as journalists, I'm just curious how it's how it is. Like, you're local, and people are frustrated at national figureheads. And some of them, I believe, mix news with their opinion. And then that breeds frustration depending on what political party you're at, depending on what station. And then when it comes down to like WDBJ, WDBJ 7 and the amazing work they do, or the News in Advance, the amazing work that you guys do, I'm like, no, I just repost this dude's article from this blog.
It's so just, yeah, you know? There's just so much to unpack. First, I just got back yesterday from an investigative journalism conference.
Shut up. Is there literally a conference for everything?
Did you go to Houston?
Yeah.
I know a girl who was down there. I don't know if I should say it on that.
I just feel like there's a conference for everything. Her name was Sarah Wade.
Anyway, so, she is looking into becoming like a local journalist.
Okay, who is this, like a legitimate organization?
Extremely legitimate, and there's a record number of journalists. There's 2,000 attendees, more than 6,000 journalists who were signed up. But more than 2,000 people converged on Houston for this conference. And when I tell you,
you tell me.
So no. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Because like when you said, like in a blink, like Barack was out, Trump was in, like whatever, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In that blink, there were so many journalists across the country, across the world.
Yeah.
People who are national journalists.
Yeah.
Who put their lives at risk to tell stories, who did take up those hard stories. And so with that being said, that there are brilliant minds in this nation who are working really hard to establish our credibility.
Yeah.
I wrote down in my notes this weekend, and it's still sticking out in my mind. Credibility is the hardest thing to earn and the easiest to throw away. And when one person might turn on to
That's
Fox,
powerful.
Or CNN, and maybe they do see an analysis show where there's, you know, a quote unquote talking head and they're up there giving an opinion.
Right.
News literacy is so important. It's important for viewers to sit back and say, what am I watching here? What kind of, is this an editorial? Is this an analysis show? Or is this a news package? And I think that there's a lack of news literacy. There's also an extremely large amount of media in the world right now. You could be a citizen journalist from your laptop.
Yeah, that's got to be a tough fight. Like I was listening to a podcast on my way back from Charlotte this morning, and I was just thinking about you two as I was thinking about my interview for today, and I was like, you know, that's got to be so hard that like social media is giving everyone the broadcast power. It used to be I turn on to see Walter Cronkite. I turn on to see Diane Sawyer. I go to the New York Post. I go to the Washington Post. I go to the New York Times. I go to Siobhan. I know she's coming on at this time, and she's going to tell me what I need to know. I'm going to go read what Rachel has to say about the new mall. And now everyone is like, right. But like it used to be like that. And then now it's like everyone has. So it's like,
so I wouldn't say it's, trust? I wouldn't say it's okay. I also don't want to, it's frustrating in a way, right? In that who do you trust? But also too, we're so lucky that we live in a place where so many people can do that.
Amen. That's right.
And a lot of brilliant independent journalists have been born out of that. A lot of brilliant blogs have been born out of that.
That's
we're
right.
So lucky to be able to read and have.
So you don't feel any friction as a journalist with these people?
Okay.
Like, if I share a story that you, like you just covered, you worked hard on that story about, hey, you know what? We need more people to take care of senior citizens. And then someone literally does a heartfelt post about their experience helping with senior citizens. And then that post right there goes viral. Everyone's like, yo, I need to sign up. And that does more traction than your story.
No, I mean, tell a better story, Siobhan. Like, you know, what are you going to do to get the people? I don't know.
Right.
Like, so how do I change the way that I'm talking to my audiences then? Yeah, I'm not going to put anyone at fault for sharing a post. I mean, did I put a lot of work into it? Did I make sure there was data? Did I make sure I got a compelling character? Yeah, and if so, come on, please share it. But also, too, no frustration. Like, yeah, I don't know. lost my train of thought there.
You can tell Siobhan has way more energy about this than I do.
No, you're
I'm like
good.
At the end of my journalism career and
yeah.
I'm like losing energy on
Rachel, okay, hold on. Okay. So one more thing.
Rachel, we're going to come back to you.
So at the conference too, they were talking about, a lot of journalists will cringe at the word, at the phrase fake news, right? That's upsetting. And I've been on.
It's upsetting to you?
I mean, it can be when you're working really hard and like risking, like there are journalists, I'm not saying I've risked my life, but there are journalists who are traveling this world who are risking their lives to tell the truth and who we believe so passionately in telling the truth,
right.
That it can be frustrating when people just dismiss and say fake news. And people have walked up to me and said it before, and I always just say, I'm Siobhan McGraw, I'm with WDBJ7, and I'm here to cover this story. And they're like, oh, great. And it breaks the barrier, right? That being said, Obey.
Yes.
There is fake news, and that
there are. So you believe there are people that have hurt your industry.
That can be one of the most frustrating things, and that is why I went to this investigative journalism conference. That is why more than 2,000 people converged on Houston. That is why more than 6,000 people are part of investigative reporters and editors, because we believe that things need to be backed up by facts, by data.
Sources, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there are more people who believe that, but when a journalist will go and do a story that gains traction or someone who's not, where people aren't being news literate and looking at their sources can be. And
I mean, it's hard to really navigate because like there's been like people like, hey, I love BuzzFeed for like these reasons, and then it's like, oh, they tell a really deep story about politics.
BuzzFeed has an investigative team,
right.
Yeah.
But then you check the sources, and it's like they have none, and it's like this is just someone's opinion.
That's why we have to be more careful. So this is journalism is more important now than ever, but we also have to be more careful now more than ever. We have to.
Yes.
I mean, we've always had
you have to
be
held to more account.
We've always been held to account. We always. I don't know if anything's changed, but maybe that there's just more forms of media.
Can I push back on that?
Sure.
Do you believe in an era back in the day where you had, it was really more, there was gatekeepers and these are the people that will tell the news? I don't know if we really held them to account. Because like, who was holding them to account? What's great about today with everyone having broadcast power, we all hold you to account. So if you tell a story and you say that these are the sources, there are people fact checking you by the second. There are people that are doing rebuttals to your video on their YouTube channel. There are people that are writing articles to your article on their, like, hey, like a New York Times columnist writes an article. He knows he's getting, hey, this person's going to cover it. This person's going to cover it. This person's going to cover
but
it.
A column is so different than
or a reporter. Sorry.
I have to see an instance where you say, here's a story and here's public fact checking it. Because I can't think of an instance like that comes into my mind.
Okay.
And also, too, if someone in our newsroom gets something wrong, we'll get a phone call. We issue a correction. And corrections have been going on since forever.
But you're at the local level. That's what I'm saying, is that most people are so focused on
the national level. They have corrections too, you know?
I'm not saying they don't. Here's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that there are journalists that aren't apologizing. I'm saying that what I have been saddened to see is that there are journalists out there, like you said, who are producing fake news, or I think are producing their opinion.
No, I didn't say journalists are producing fake news. I said that there's fake news out there. There are maybe, I don't know if I would say journalists. I don't know if I'd call people who don't fact check and don't do the sourcing journalists. But hey, there are things that will go viral. I went to a conference last year and they had an instance of it, of this ridiculous like thing that went out. Oh, I wish I could remember. And it got picked up because the AP wrote an article, and then it was on like every TV station in the nation and all of this stuff. And it turned out it wasn't true. And they went back and I was like, oh, that's not, you guys ran on one article, right? So that is happening. I don't use the term fake news against my industry. I'm saying that there are instances of people not properly fact checking out there, just to kind of clarify my point. You know what I mean?
Okay, so I will say the best example of fake news to me, which is also I think the majority of the news sadly, is the way that we have seen politics covered from 2016, 15 till now. And I think that like what I have seen time and time and time again is reputable reporters and reputable stories that I don't see manifesting into truth. And that's, I'm reading articles constantly from people where I'm like, this is just someone's opinion. And it's like, he has a source that he cannot name. And also, can I ask you a question, Siobhan? So you have a source.
Yeah.
You cannot name that source. Mm-hmm. How do I know in this day and age, it's just like, it's very hyper and it's very volatile. I think when I read a source, for example, on the current president, Donald Trump, and I'm like, this is just ridiculous. This is happening, right? Let's take a perfect example. There were children that were being held in detention that were crossing the border, right? And they were coming here to achieve freedom, right? They weren't going through the natural process. So we were just detaining them and they were in quote unquote cages. Not good, right? They were separated from their parents. They just took a ridiculously long trek. And someone who's an immigrant, this is like, immigration is something I'm just very passionate about. We're going to have a podcast with one of my buddies who's a DACA recipient. I see a story come out that what Donald Trump is doing to these kids in cages is horrific. You read this article. I don't want to name the paper. And you read it, it's like, this is horrific. I then do my own research. And I come to find out the policy and what's been going on has been going on since the last president. But nothing is mentioned about, hey, this is a reoccurring policy. Because again, people don't understand the federal government, how big it is. And for the president to know what's going on the Phoenix border is just one of the many daily briefings he's getting. And so what I get frustrated is this reporter is trying to tell a story, right? There are kids that are being mistreated, but does not give the full context of like, this is a federal government mandate. ICE is doing their job. He paints it as if evil man Donald Trump putting kids in cages. And then I go, that's horrific. This president's awful. But now I've learned to do my own research. And then you begin to study and you go, wait a minute. If this is a policy during this administration, it's a policy now, then we just have an issue that needs to be addressed through Congress. Mm-hmm. Right? So then I get upset at that reporter, because if you're doing a story that's that volatile in this time, it's going to get a lot of clicks. To get a lot of looks. I'm reading it. But if you don't take the time to add those sources in and say, hey, just for context, understand, this isn't he's an evil person. I decree kids held in cages. This is a policy of like, we're detaining these kids here because we don't know, is this guy a drug trafficker? Is that his parent? What's going on? Also, it's a policy that's been going on for past administrations. So that's what I say when I say that news right there, that's not real news. That's someone trying to stir up something that I don't think is needed in this country at the climate that we're in. And so that's when I lose trust in that reporter and lose trust in that newspaper. Yeah. Because you said that credibility, I give you a chance once, then I read another story, then I read another, and it just continually happens like that, where I'm like, wait a minute, I'm reading other sources now that say, oh, here's this context, and that context matters. So why is this newspaper over here doing the context and you're not? And also, news is not the same depending on what journalist you're reading, depending on what paper you're reading. So, and that's why I say for you guys, I feel for you. I bring that full circle because you're on the local level. And that permeates, I feel like, in my mind and in other people's minds down to the local level, where then I'm like, would I rather read the news in advance, or would I rather read this person who covers local politics, or this article on Facebook?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. So this is one of my least favorite kind of instances, because fact checking, I can't fact check anything you just said. I don't know the reporter who did it.
Right,
I don't.
Right.
So you know what I mean? So I'm not going to comment on any of that.
On 30,000 foot level.
Exactly. So I'm not going to comment on all of that and that article and what policy looked up, because I really just don't know. And also, I only consumed that story as a news consumer, not as a journalist.
Of course.
So I don't have any experience reporting on that. That being said, I will tell you, you asked about like anonymous sources. We have an extremely high threshold in our newsroom for if we don't name someone. In fact,
never happened.
Yeah, I can't think.
You have to name your source.
So
why is that not done nationally? Sources can't be named?
So nationally, there, for instance, if there's a source who my news director says, yeah, we can't name them, it's because their life would be at danger, or because they're a victim of an extremely violent crime or something like that.
Okay.
And just to be blunt, that happens. Those types of stories happen less in Lynchburg, in my experience, than they do on the national level. If someone's coming to you as a whistleblower, and could lose their life or lose their job or their security, that's going to happen more on the national level when we're dealing with politics.
Right.
But I've sat in on panels with the editor-in-chief of the New York Times, and they explained their threshold. And so, again, I kind of have this trust in the newsrooms that are operating, that they hopefully operate like ours, where there's this threshold, but I don't know. And so anyway, we have that extremely high threshold. I've always named my sources. I've never had an instance where I've even had to sit down and have the tough conversation about that. And you talked about earlier who decides what's newsworthy. I could take you through my process. For instance, for my story today, I spent the whole weekend looking over agendas, right, for city council, for counties, and for their board of supervisor meetings, the Region 2000 agenda, making sure I'm not missing anything on that front. I went back and I have a list. I do court checks. So I check and see the people who are high profile or who murdered someone, are they in court this week? I go on the events tab on Facebook, see what's going on in our community. I go and I check warrants. And then those things rise to a level and I say, well, how many people would be affected? My story today was on Lynchburg's first Freedom School opening. It opened today, and it's a movement based out of the Civil Rights Movement, where Freedom Schools were started in Mississippi in 1964 to empower African Americans when the segregation policies were against them still.
Yeah.
And now it's taken new form into this Freedom School, and the first one's happening in Lynchburg, and there are 50 students. And I thought, hey, I think that some people in Lynchburg would care about that. Another reporter said, hey, there was a fire in Campbell County that displaced a family. That was another story. Attorney General Mark Herring decided to reignite his fight on decriminalizing marijuana. So that was of interest to a lot of people.
So when you say these things, I'm just curious, Siobhan, when you say it's of interest to people, like how are you gay? Like, where are you saying, like?
I look at the data. I look at, so for instance, the achievement gap is something in Lynchburg that is an issue.
The
achievement gap. So
what is that?
Students in Lynchburg, for instance, last 2017, 2018, white students scored better on the SOL tests than students who are black across the board on all of them. I didn't check history, but on math, reading, writing, science.
Just for this last year?
For 2017, 2018. And it's been an issue. And they talk about it in Lynchburg City School Board meetings. I mean, this is an issue that I know that people care about in Lynchburg. They put it on agendas. That's what the people who run the city are talking about.
Has there been any studies done onto why?
They're starting a task force to start to look at the schools and talk about things like the achievement gap. And so, given that the achievement gap is an issue, this Freedom School, 80% of the children in it are low income. All of the students are students of color. And I thought, and I looked at the attendance, I looked at the nonprofit that was starting it, Center Health, which is one of the biggest employers in our region, awarded them $40,000 in grants. So given all of that and all of that confluence of factors, that said to me, well, these are some pretty important stakeholders in the community. These are some pretty important issues. And this event is going on. And so, boom, that's a story. And also, they had some compelling characters. I had some good data. When I can tell a story with some data and some characters, bada bing. What do you think, Rachel?
That is good.
What do you think?
Rachel, we need to hear from you. So I want I got questions for you, Rachel. So I want to know for you, because you're a little bit more of the seasoned journalist. Not like saying Siobhan, you're not seasoned, but I mean, like, you've been in it a little bit longer. And so I'm just curious for you. You said that, like, you know, you kind of, your time's coming to an end as a journalist. As you're reflecting on this time as a journalist and your time spent doing it, what is your view on, you know, I don't know. Do you feel like there's like a little bit of a tension between people's viewpoint of journalists versus, you know, what you think of journalism today, or national journalists versus local, or what that difference is? Because I think Siobhan did a great job of explaining, like, here's how I am looking for great stories to tell and they're important for this community. Like, for you, reflecting back on your time, since you've been here a little bit more, and you're from here, so you've seen a lot. You've seen this town come from nothing but was that Lynchburg? Oh, we just passed it, and now it's a flourishing, I mean, really flourishing city, which I believe will be one of the top cities in this state probably 10, 15 years. I really think it's really starting to move in that way. I really think the businesses are starting to come into that. So for you, you know, as a journalist, how do you feel like your time here? Like, do you feel like there was any, like, you were fighting against social media, you were fighting against public perception because of the national journalists?
That's a lot.
Yeah, come on. That's why we're here.
So much.
Yeah, no, I know now. When I'm going into a question, I don't really have a question, and then somebody says, like, could you maybe repeat that? And I know now, like, it's a lot.
I'm getting better at not loading up too much on my guest. I apologize.
So Siobhan is so much smarter than me, and so she knows.
Stop. You were just as smart.
No, we're just different reporters. I look back at my time being a journalist and I'm really grateful for it. I mean, I'm not going to do it forever. That's not.
Is that your lifelong?
No, not at all. Like, not at all. I just really want to like gain new skills. I want to keep writing. I want to keep doing the communication stuff. Just move into like another, like maybe do work for like a company that focuses on like one thing, and you work for like a nonprofit or corporate or something, and you're doing their public relations or you're doing their communications for something that I'm into and passionate about. Just to gain new skills, just because I've been here for 5 years and I've had a great time and I've covered lots of stuff and I'm from Lynchburg, so I've really enjoyed that. I have seen Lynchburg grow in phenomenal ways, and that's why I love doing the business beat, because I'm actually, like, I really do care about the city and I really do care about the downtown. I mean, I tell this story a lot to people because I think Siobhan will 100% agree with me. People here, even though it is a growing city, it is a bit of a small town. Mm-hmm. People, like, unfortunately, I mean, what good for me, but unfortunately for other people, they just trust me more, and it's not more than Siobhan or any, but no, it, comes easy, local. Yeah. It comes easy to me. And I say that like it's
that plays it in, be, in, but, in local like areas, like, hey, she's from here. She knows us. She knows the history.
And I mean, that's my greatest advantage. It really is. And I promise you, I use it. And I'm not at all lying to people when I say I love this city and I have seen it grown up. Like, I tell people that because it is a really good way to like get people to trust me and to know that I'm not just moving through here and I'm not just like coming in and just kind of dotting the I's and crossing the T's. I care about Lynchburg. And I'm not saying that other journalists come in and do that. I'm just saying that I have a different stance on Lynchburg and I see it in a different light than maybe some other people would. Right. And so I tell this story a lot to people that, back in the 90s when we parked our car in like the downtown area and we were taking, I guess we had parked our car somewhere downtown and taken the Amtrak to New York. And we came back. I remember I don't know why we parked our car all the way down on Jefferson Street, but we parked it next to where Waterstone is now, but did not exist at the time. It was like an area with just a bunch of like humongous stones. And we actually have some of them in my parents' backyard now. Mm. They're like benches. But anyway, and we came back and somebody had like thrown a rock or something through our car window. I mean, it was deserted. There was nothing around, nothing going on. I mean, maybe a few businesses downtown at that point, but nothing like what it is today. And I always say, like, I'm not saying that would never happen again, but I'm saying it's unlikely that that would happen down at Waterstone if you left your car. So I just have really gotten to see, like, just visually in my mind, I can remember when we would go to the... what Friday Cheers was up at the community market. Mm-hmm. And you just have it in the parking lot and you'd have a couple of bands and my sister and I would play up on the hill. Just like these great memories growing up in Lynchburg and then being able to see all of that come to fruition. And I get really frustrated, to be honest, Obey, and it's hard for me to be like, okay, sure, I can see where you're coming from. But I get frustrated when people comment on things, and that's my biggest weakness. I shouldn't read the comments. I hate reading the comments.
Social media and people's opinions, but people it comes attack fast.
You personally. I've gotten thicker skin, but I'm just a sensitive person, like to my heart and soul.
Right.
But just to hear people say like, downtown's trash and downtown stinks and downtown, I don't ever go down there. Like,
and this is based on your stories?
No, just stuff that people, stuff that I've posted, but more just in general, just people posting about downtown. And I start thinking, just getting to know a lot of business owners downtown, like they're really working hard and they are, I mean, a really close knit. I mean, you live downtown. I'm sure you know, like it's a close knit group. You know, my dad works downtown and he's always worked downtown. And so I remember I come down in the summers before I had this job, before I was like really aware of downtown and its hub. But I'd come down with him and we'd always go in the summer and go walk up to Monument Terrace and go get a hot dog, which I don't think they have those stands anymore. But I remember it taking us forever to get up a couple of blocks because my dad would just at that lunch hour in the summer, just people walking, going to different meetings or going to lunch or wherever they're going and just stopping and talking to people all the time. And that's not to say like my dad's special and my dad's really popular. It's just like as a business owner, they just know each other and they just support each other. Yeah. And so I really like, I care a lot about downtown. And so I really enjoy covering businesses. I say that it's a different animal. And Siobhan will probably agree with me as well on this. You cannot FOIA business owners for information.
Yeah, that's really
you can't
difficult.
Make them tell you.
I mean, at least with nonprofits, you have the 990s.
Yeah, we've got GuideStar.
With businesses.
Yeah, businesses, like I'm so desperate to know like what's the new thing that's happening and I want to know.
You can only find you're out by sourcing and Rachel is so lucky because she sources.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it takes a while. Yeah. I mean, building those relationships is like 90% of my job. And I have days where I feel like I've done nothing and I've turned in no story. But it's because like, it's just slow moving. Like just trying to like, somebody will say, hey, like I've got this project. I just can't talk to you about it right now. And you have to like build that trust with them and say, okay, well, I'm not gonna write about it. And then I say, okay, well, that's fine. That's fine that you don't wanna talk to me about it now. I respect that.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, and I'll write it down on my planner, when can I contact you again? Oh, a month? Okay. A month from today, I'll call you.
So it's a very laborious thing. Like trying.
It's hard. I mean, I feel so good. I've got a running list of things. And when I cross one out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just great. It's so great to know that you finally, like, something happened.
So it seems like you haven't seen anything nationally affect you locally as you're covering local. And for both of you, there is a huge difference between a local journalist, reporter, than a national journalist and national reporter. And it seems like I think people have, at least I've definitely been fighting this, is that these are different. Just like there's a difference between local politics and national politics.
Yeah.
And so when we're thinking about consuming news, like Siobhan was saying, it's like, here's how I cover story. And I can tell right now, like, I want to read that story. But for some reason, I don't know what it is. We get sucked nationally. We get disappointed. And then it's like, everyone's kind of just like, all right, well, I'm not like going to read the news in advance. Or I'm not watching the
news. Yeah, we've battled with that, Obey.
Social media has got to have affected y'all and like made it frustrating.
It's tough.
Because I understand you guys are, because I'm pro free speech. And I love that we have more people to be able to broadcast. And there are no gatekeepers with news, but then it's also hard. What is fake? What is real? You know, we have another country that has tried to manipulate the flow of information to this country to affect our national politics, you know? So with that comes that kind of thing where it's like, okay, well, we need to have this conversation then, because if other countries start next election just flooding us with articles that aren't real, of stories that aren't real,
That's tough. I mean, that's going to be tough. And we also have to have the discussion. I mean, you can't just call fake news at something because you don't like the news.
I don't even like, for me, I wouldn't use the term fake news unless we're talking like,
I'm surprised I'm even saying it in this.
Like, right. I think it's because we're in conversation again. Like, but I wouldn't say that. I would never say that to a journalist. But I do think there are people, I would more so say, I think this person is just giving me their opinion. And I don't know like I don't mind someone's opinion if that's what I'm coming here for. But I'm assuming, and this is another thing that's another, I guess I want to point, I want to ask you guys is there true objectivity in news? Like when I go to WDBJ7, is Siobhan telling me objectively just the baseline, hey, here's what it is? Or is she telling me, here's what it is through my filter? Because I think you just have to naturally, like, nothing against you guys. I'm not saying this is a negative. I'm just curious, like, for people that just want to understand journalists and journalism, I didn't take classes.
You mean like to peek behind the curtain?
Like for you, are you being objective fully? Like, Siobhan's just like, here's what happened. Or are you like, you know, like, I don't agree.
We have, yeah. I mean, I'll say that we have,
or is that just a local thing?
Like, we have like 3 or 4 or 5 editors who like are reading behind. I mean, I can't just write something up, Obey, and just like put it out there.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of
people. And being objective is like our number one priority.
I mean, I don't even know how to.
I'm not trying to be rude by asking that. Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying. I've been
for so long, I'm like so objective. Right. But I want so bad to tell people, like, I would love if we had, I always say this, I love it if, like, what Citizens Academy, I wish that we had, like, a news academy.
Oh, that's,
some people could
like
come
I said,
in.
Like I said and, earlier like, in the podcast, come I wish we could do this with other things.
Like, try. Yes. I think a lot of people think, I'm going to come in and I'm going to write what I want. And that's the way it's going to be. And nobody's going to stop me. That's a column. That's an editorial. That's not you coming in and reporting news. Like, if you had to come in and, like, oh, wait, this person isn't calling me back. I'm just going to make some. No, you can't do that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wait, this person told me this news, but I'm off the record. I can't put that in there.
My favorite days in the newsroom are the days where we spend hours arguing over one word in a story because every word matters.
Come on.
And when we get to have that level of argument in our newsroom, thinking about, well, what is the right word to go there?
Yeah.
Those are my favorite days. And those happen often. And I mean, listen, I don't know what happens in other newsrooms. I don't know what happens in Rachel's newsroom. I don't know what happens in SATs or SLSs, but I know what happens in mine, and that's all I can speak to.
Exactly.
You know, right. I know that every day we have pitch meetings that last a long time. We have reporters who research their pitches before. We have people who are building sources.
You tell me what, like, a pitch? Are you saying, like, hey, I want to do this story? Do you pitch it?
Yeah. We call in every morning. Yeah. We pitch it.
Oh, you don't. So you don't get to just say, like, yo, I want to cover this.
People will tell us stuff, and we'll say, okay, well, I gotta pitch it. Like, I gotta pitch it.
I'm not sure if it's gonna. Yeah.
Yeah, we can't just go and be like, we're gonna go do this story.
No, because like, after my process, what I told you about on the weekend of what I do to prep stories.
Yeah.
I then have to go and sell that to a room of like 10 people. And then they all have to decide, yep, that checks the boxes of, is it a story?
Yeah.
And then it's, okay, go.
And they're constantly thinking, those editors who are like far smarter than we are, because we've been there for, I don't know about Siobhan's, of course. I mean, there's Tim, of course, you can't argue. He's great. But these editors who've been doing this a lot longer, they're thinking so much bigger picture than we are. Because like, even though maybe this person will call me up and yell at me for this article, like, I mean, our editors are so great. They'll say, like, just pass it on to me. We'll take the hit. And they have to be the one who's willing to, like, say, okay, well, when's the last time we wrote about this? Are we showing favor to somebody else? Are we putting too much emphasis on one organization? We've covered them too. You know, it's just tough. It's really, people do not realize
what goes into this. I'm listening to you guys, and I'm just wishing, like, why can't I feel this with my national journalist?
Well, okay.
At times I do, and at times I don't.
I just wish
people would differentiate between, like, well, I wish people would start seeing us as, like, I think people forget that, like, I am a human being, and my name is Rachel, and I live here. I shop here. I eat here.
Come on, girl.
You know? And people, I think, like Siobhan was saying, when she walks up and says, hi, I'm Siobhan, you know, get to know me.
So you feel like people have dehumanized you?
I think they forget. Like, they just see her on the screen. I don't think they think, Siobhan's got an apartment here, and Siobhan lives here.
Yeah.
Siobhan has a life here.
She's a citizen with me in this community.
Right. Well, I mean, you gotta, you know, that's why another thing is, like, you don't want to ever fit the mold of a reporter, because you gotta be your own reporter, because it builds trust. That's one thing I've learned. That's a huge lesson, is you don't go up there and hello, you be yourself, because these are the stories you're reporting, that you've worked hard to figure out the facts on, that you've worked hard to figure out the data. And I do want to take up the national journalism. After this podcast, I'm going to hit you up with some links of some great national journalism. Because I mean, like,
I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to disagree with you. Those people are great and amazing. I'm just saying,
I get it.
When you go to New York Times and you go to here and you just hear, oh, this is, you don't, sometimes you don't even look at the journalist, you're just reading the article, and then you're like, scroll back up. Like, what? Like, I just, yeah, you're starting to feel
something. Have you ever been to the museum?
Oh, you got to go.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Well, yeah.
This is my museum right now.
Yeah. No.
Oh, yeah. Dear. No,
it
no.
Will, it would change your life.
Do not put that burden on us.
Okay. So the museum. Okay, so the museum's in D.C.
Yes.
And it's the museum of...
news.
Is it
going to... It's going to... Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be. All right,
well,
so...
anyway, you need to go soon.
Let me segue.
Wait, what was that whisper?
It's closing soon, but I think they're going to reopen in a different location.
Stop.
Google it.
How many sources do you have for that?
I mean, like
is this breaking right now?
Could you please just look it up, okay?
This was a long time ago, but anyway, you should go where it is now because it's phenomenal and you would have a lot of appreciation.
I think that at the cornerstone of what you've kind of been trying to get at today is... So this is, I'm reading from my phone. It's a pointer. They train journalists and they also write different articles on trends across the country in media.
It's a really good resource.
Yeah. And so the Pointer Media Trust Survey came out in 2018 and they found that 76% of Americans across the political spectrum have a quote, great deal or quote, a fair amount of trust in their local television news. 73% have confidence in local newspapers, contrasted with 55% in national network news and 59% in national newspapers and 47% in online news only.
Right.
And this really touches, so I didn't know about this until I read this article. There's this thing, I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing it right. It's Fennos, F-E-N-N-O, Fennos Paradox.
Mm-hmm.
And according to Pointer, it's this notion that Americans disapprove of Congress but support their own members of Congress. And so it's that idea of, oh, well, the fake news media. Oh, but not you, hon. Like, I've had Uber drivers say that to me before. Oh, the fake news media, but not you, Siobhan. And I'm like, well, I met you 20 minutes ago, Uber driver. And and I appreciate that you feel that way.
Yeah.
And so it's that thing of, like, degrees of separation where, you know, with local politics, maybe people, like, care more and trust more. And then national politics, they're turned off.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen this trend now where people are gaining more trust in local news outlets. And that's why local journalism
I'm telling you right now, Rachel did a great story on the mall. I read it.
Yeah, we covered that story. Yeah.
Right. And I was like, that was a really good article. I was like, this is... Because I was curious about the mall... Something locally. Yeah.
I broke that story. I was so excited.
And I texted her.
I worked my freaking sources on that.
And I texted her and I said, great story. And I literally, because I've been, having friends in the media now, having friends that are journalists, I'm starting to understand the process and how much work and time you're putting. So I myself, as someone who wants to positively influence my sphere of influence, I want to make sure that as I do that, I'm sending them to like, hey, here's this article that Rachel did on the malls, if I'm in group chats, or if I can repost this to my Facebook so that people can just know, but also be like, yo, I need to go check out the news in advance because Rachel Smith or this person or person number B, C, D, E is doing good work and giving me the news the right way. Because I think that when you look at journalism, I want people to know, oh, Rachel's from EC Glass. Oh, she's from this community. Oh, Siobhan McGirl is this. Like, she is so passionate. She goes to conferences for this. So I need to, like, trust her when she says, I'm telling you right now, you know, this is what's happening for this issue.
Well, and Siobhan said she went to all... I mean, I think there are citizens that are going to all these things, but most of them aren't. Like, we are at these meetings. We're sitting through them. I go to every single planning.
I went back for city council meeting after Citizens Academy. I was like,
but people come in and they're like, you know, hating on us, and we're like, we went to this meeting. We're telling you what happened.
And also
you're welcome
to
go as well.
To peel back the layers a little bit more, you'll see on TV a lot more. I don't know if the paper is doing this, but TV journalists is now more of a trend, this thing called process journalism.
Where
I'll stand up and say, like say we break a story and I'll say we combed through thousands of documents, or you know, we had this question, we filed these open records requests under public records laws, we got this in return, we combed through thousands of pages of documents and we show the documents, we show us coming through, we called this person, we tried for 2 months to get in touch with that person, they sent us this statement, we tried to go to their office.
You're basically proving.
We're showing people, and it builds so much more trust because you're saying, oh wow, like they didn't just say, Oh, really? That happened? Well, hello.
And that's part of why we don't use anonymous sources. I mean, you're like proving that this is not like a made up person that we just use to
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, we say it.
Is that a journalistic standard? So, like, I don't understand why nationally.
I can't speak for. I mean,
I would assume
this is the only news organization.
Because I'm going to be honest. Like a lot of the articles I read nationally, I don't understand why it has to be like these are the sources we don't really know or can't say who the sources are.
It depends on that.
Because it's, I know the point you brought up earlier with the sources, and I trust that. I'm just saying, my goodness, like, it would just solidify your story. Because now I'm just like,
well, and I've read articles like that, and you wonder, but right. At the same time, like, you sit there and you wonder, like, why didn't they get that? But then you think, I'm not in that situation. I'm not in that newsroom. I don't know what their standards are.
Right.
Because, you got to call up the New York Times and you got to talk to the editor in chief of it.
Yeah, ask them.
Because I think that's the only way that you're going to feel maybe a little bit more comfortable on that national level. But I'm telling you, when you read a WDBJ article, just know that that's our standard. You know what I mean? Or when you read a News in Advance article, know that that's their standard.
Yeah, we have to call somebody like X amount of times. If they don't pick up, like we can't just call them once and say, oh, they just didn't pick up. We have to call them a certain amount of times or try to reach out to them a certain amount of times to give them that chance within a certain amount of hours.
Wow. To make sure. And my story is airing at 6.
And if
my story is airing at 6. Up, 4, hey.
And if they 50. Say, if they say we don't want to comment, we tell them like, okay, well, we will put that in we will say, because I've gotten that before. Why didn't this person, why didn't she ask this person this question? But it's in the article. They refuse to comment.
I even let people know, we asked them specifically X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm.
They did not have the opportunity to sit down, and they said no comment. You know what I mean?
It's just like saying we did do the work.
Letting the people know. I can see you're interested in it. It's just letting the people know like what we do to make sure that we are, again, credibility is the hardest thing to earn, easiest to throw away.
And journalists just like, I don't know. Look, I mean, I don't know how many journalists would disagree or agree with me, whether on the local or not. I just think that like, I think that things have changed and Siobhan can disagree or agree. But I just don't think that like we do get the respect that we deserve. And I don't know if it's like, it's so tough because every market is different and every news station is different. But I just like, I feel like on a just local level, I wish that people took the time to get to know us and to respect us more and to appreciate the work. I mean, I occasionally, I'll get emails from people saying, great job, thank you so much. And I save it in a favorites folder. I always respond back to them and tell them thank you because those things mean the world to me because I do get phone calls and other emails, just people like somebody today cut out a piece of my article with the headline, which I didn't write the little sub thing, but they cut it out and then put it in the paper or put it in a envelope, mailed it to me and like told me how pitiful and awful of a journalist I am. And I was like, but what, like, I guess you could do that to anybody at any work, but like, does that, I mean,
it's a coward. It's someone that's...
It's frustrating. So I think that like as a human being,
yeah.
I've learned to like take that, but it's frustrating. And you start to like, after 5 years, which isn't that long, it's not like over 50 years, but after 5 years, you start to feel like you're a little bit. But then everyone, after that person happens, somebody else comes in and is like, thanks for everything you're doing. You're doing a great job. Thank you so much for telling my story. It's made this difference in my life. And this person now knows about X, Y, and Z or about my daughter that's sick and we've raised money for it or what, and Siobhan has those stories too. Those things make it like, that's what makes it worthwhile. Like you feeling like you have some role to play in somebody's story that you get to help tell that because we do, like we have an important job because we do have that mouthpiece. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to use it wisely. And you come in and you're like, I'm not really feeling this story, but because it's somebody else's and you're like, maybe that one chance for that person to like get their story out there. And that's what I think for me is what it boils down to when I have those tough days, just remembering, the small difference. It's not insignificant. We're not like saving lives or not doctors, but we're playing a role in society.
Sojourners, especially the sojourners in Lynchburg, Virginia, I need it to be very apparent to you that you will support, on behalf of me, you will support Rachel Smith and the News in Advance, Siobhan McGurl, and WDBG. WDBJ. WDBJ 7.
But also check out WDBG and any other local news outlets or news outlets.
WDBG is a great, great outlet. Let me tell you guys. Let me know how you guys feel about their work, and also let them know how you feel about their work, because I think this conversation was really needed. I think I learned a lot. I think a lot of the Sojourners are going to listen to this learned a lot. And if you're watching this, I want you to please feel that you, like, feel open to having these conversations within your communities. This is why we're here. This is why this podcast is here. Go find someone who's a journalist. If you have an issue with journalism today, have this kind of conversation and learn about what they do, their processes. Reach out to that journalist and say, hey, what kind of, can I learn a little bit more about the story and why you said this or why you left this source, you know, anonymous? I think today we have more accessibility than we realize. And we also need to also remember these people, journalists, reporters, anchor, women and men, are human beings, and they're doing an amazingly good job, especially here in Lynchburg. We got an amazing TV news station, an amazing newspaper. So, guys, this was amazing. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Siobhan. Thank you for being here in Sojourn Studios. Thank you for coming on the podcast. We got to do this again, I feel like, for sure.
Thanks for having us, Obey.
This was awesome. Thanks. Thank you guys so much. Hey, make sure you guys check out the notes below, because we're going to put Rachel's favorite book from her, or a lot of books from her childhood. And Siobhan may put a couple books. I don't know. She really was just like giving you inspirational quotes that just like touched your soul. But maybe she'll add a couple books that we could add in the show notes below. And yeah, guys, this was awesome. This was a lot of fun. And I appreciate you guys coming on.
Thank you.